We've been studying God's plan to grow the church His way. And we've been talking about the fact that in order for the church to grow, we must exalt Jesus. And we've talked about several different aspects about Jesus that need to be exalted. And we come now to what probably, when we talk about growing the church, is the most obvious. And that is that we need to exalt Jesus' church. We need to make sure that people understand the connection between Jesus and His church. Because there are a lot of people in the world today who think that you can have Jesus and not have to worry about the church. A lot of people think, well, I'm a good Christian, but they don't have anything to do with any church. And then there are many who think that you can be a Christian, but then where you go to church or what you do at church or what that church teaches doesn't matter. But I'm here to tell you that if we study the Bible, it will be clear to us that there is a connection, a very distinct connection between Christ and His church. So let's continue with His church. Matthew 16:18 was read a little while ago. First of all, we have to understand that it is His church. There are some people who seem to have this disconnect and think that the church was something that was established by the apostles later on. Now, it's true that while Jesus was on this earth, the church was not yet established. But Jesus Himself makes it very clear here in Matthew 16:18 that He's the one that built it and that it belonged to Him. So we need not think that somehow we can have Christ and ignore the church. This is the first Sunday of a new year. And I had originally planned to preach this lesson last week to finish out the old year for us to look forward to this year and look at the ways that we can and need to exalt the church in 2010. But it'll work just as well this year, this week, the first Sunday of this new year. We're looking at this year. What can we do? How can we exalt the church? Well, why do we even need to? What difference does it make? And these are the things that we're looking at right here. In Matthew chapter 16, Jesus makes it clear that it does make a difference. He's built something that He considers special. As Paul calls the Ephesian elders to Him, He points out to them that it was a very special thing, so much so that He purchased it with His blood. So when we start thinking about the church, we need to realize it is not just something that man came up with. Now, there are plenty of churches that man has come up with. But the original, you ever see something says, the original something? Well, there may be a lot of copies. There may be, with particular drugs, there may be a lot of generic brands that you could get. But there is only one that is the original. And the same is true with the church. There are a lot of counterfeits. There are a lot of generics out there. There are a lot of man-made ones, but there's only one original. And the original is the one that we want to talk about this morning. It's the one I hope that we all want to be a part of. So why do we need to even exalt the church? We must exalt Jesus' church, first of all, because it is His bride. We live in a world that doesn't seem to value marriage very much. It doesn't value husbands and wives. Don was reading something just yesterday that someone had written a note to a friend, and in a joking way, they made some remark that put down her husband's intelligence. Now, that doesn't seem like the kind of thing that a husband or wife ought to put up with. If someone were to come to me and say, well, James, your kids are so cute, but boy, your wife sure is ugly. Should I laugh? And yeah, that's really funny. Or should I defend my wife? Because I don't think she's ugly at all. I think she's beautiful. I know she is. Other people may disagree, but that, you know, they've been wrong about other things, and they'll be wrong again in the future. So the fact that I know my wife is beautiful, And I'm going to stand up for her. I know she's smart, and I'm going to defend her. I know these things about the situation. Well, when we think about Jesus and His bride, we need to realize that Jesus is not like a lot of spouses today who will allow their spouse to be put down, teased, joked about, mistreated, or even engage in doing that themselves. I've heard a lot of husbands and wives who will run down their own spouse. They'll say some of the most horrible things to their face and about them and to others with them standing right there that I know it hurts their feelings. And I've done it too. All of us have said things that we shouldn't. I've said things that embarrass Dawn, sometimes for good reasons, but a lot of times, I've told a story on her that wasn't very complimentary, and it hurt her feelings. But we need to understand, Jesus isn't that kind of a spouse. Jesus is not that kind of a husband. He's not going to do anything to put down His church, His bride that He loves, and He is going to defend her. So if we want to get in good with Him, we need to get in good with His wife. You ever found that with some folks, if you can get close to the husband or wife, then you can get close to them. You can get friendship with them. Some folks are that way. And that's the way Jesus is. I want us to notice in Revelation 21, and I know this is often mentioned in connection with heaven, but I want us to notice what Revelation 21 and verse 9 says. There came unto me one of the seven angels which had the seven vials full of the seven last plague, and talked with me, saying, Come hither, I will show thee the bride, the Lamb's wife. Well, we know who the Lamb's wife is. That's the church. So the angel comes and says, I'm going to show you the church. And in verse 10, he says, He carried me away in the Spirit to a great and high mountain and showed me that great city, the holy Jerusalem, descending out of heaven from God. And so he says, I'm going to show you the bride. I'm going to show you what the church looks like to Christ. Have you ever wondered what you look like to somebody else? Or wondered what somebody else might look like through someone else's eye? You ever see two people together and you think, what does he see in her? What does she see in him? And you know that there must be something. They must be seeing that person different than you do. Well, the way that the world sees the church is not the same as the way that Christ sees the church. If you continue to read after verse 10, as John describes the vision of this holy city, the heavenly Jerusalem, the Lamb's bride, the church, he describes one of the most beautiful visions you can imagine. He talks about a street of gold. He talks about gates of pearl, and talks about all these fine gems and all these beautiful things. That's the way Christ sees the church, as something beautiful and perfect and spotless. And then here we come. And we start running it down, and we start talking bad about it. And we go out there telling everybody what a miserable time it is to be a part of the church, and how we can't have any fun because we're Christians and we're in the church now, and so we can't enjoy life anymore. And say all kinds of horrible things that people say about the church. Now, how do you suppose that makes Jesus as a loving husband feel? You see, now, a lot of men would just enjoy, my wife, blah, 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 blah. But Jesus isn't that way. Jesus is going to defend His church, His bride, His wife, and her purity. Remember, the church is the bride of Christ. The church is not a prostitute. And yet that's what people today have tried to make the church out to be. They've made the church run around with every doctrine out there, instead of staying true to Christ and His doctrine. They've made churches that are unfaithful. It's the same picture that was painted in the Old Testament by Hosea, the prophet, and his wife Gomer. And he went and took this wife, and she was a prostitute. And he bought her out of prostitution to make her his wife. And then she turned around and went right back to it. And he had to go back and get her again. And so much so that one of her children, he named not my child, because that one didn't belong to him. But he kept going and getting her back. And God said, that's the way my people treat me. I bring them up from Egyptian slavery, and how do they treat me? They run off with the first false god they see. And then, you know, and he goes and he gets them back, and they run off again. The church is not to be like that. The church is supposed to be a pure, holy bride that's faithful to her husband. And we need to help it to be that way. And we need to speak of the church with that kind of respect. A bride, a beautiful bride. Ephesians 5, 23-32. Paul explains to the Ephesian church how husbands and wives are to relate to each other. And he tells the husbands to love their wives as Christ loved the church. He tells the church and the wives to be subjection to their husband as the church is in subjection to Christ. And he goes on about these things, about how much the Lord loved the church, even giving Himself for it. Now, there are not many people in this world that I would die for, but my wife is one of them. In fact, she's top of the list. I would die for her before I would die for my children. Because if I got her, I can always make more children. I know parents used to say things like that. They said, I brought you into this world and I can take you out and bring in another one. You know, but the fact of the matter is, there is something special about a husband and a wife that goes beyond every other relationship on this earth. And those who haven't experienced that, or maybe had a marriage that wasn't like that, I'm sorry. This is the way Christ's relationship with His church is, though. And it's a beautiful thing. And we have the opportunity to be a part of that relationship as members of the church, as a part of the bride of Christ. We can have that kind of relationship with Christ, even if we've never had that kind of relationship physically with another person. Christ loves His bride. And He said, after He's talked about the husband and the wife, notice verse 31, He says, for this cause shall a man leave his father and mother and shall be joined unto his wife, and they two shall be one flesh. So when you insult the church, or when you drag the church down, or you drag the church's name through the mud by your unholy living, you're doing that to Christ. You know, Jesus said, as you've done unto one of the least of these, my brethren, you've done it unto me. Why does that surprise us? The church is special in His sight. And He will treat it as such. He will defend the church with His life. He already gave His life for her. And He will defend her to the end. And He will come back for her. But He's not going to come back for every other woman in the world that claims Him. He's only coming back for His bride. At the end of that, in verse 32, Paul says, it's a great mystery, but I'm talking about Christ and the church. He's been talking about it. He relates it to the husband and the wife, and he says, husbands, wives, there are a lot of lessons you can learn here, but I'm talking about Christ and the church. So what about a church that says, well, you know, I know that Jesus said A, B, C, D, but, you know, we like it better H-I-J-K. So we're going to do it this way instead of His way. Is that church being in subjection to Christ? Is that church being the kind of wife that He wants? No. In fact, He did all these things, verse 27 of Ephesians 5 says, that He might present it to Himself a glorious church, not having spot or wrinkle or any such thing, but that it should be holy and without blemish. You know, it's always amazed me the way men, and I guess I don't know why it's always been this way, it seems, that men want to run around with all sorts of women, but then when they look for a wife, they want one that didn't run around with other guys. They somehow think it's okay for them to go running around, but they don't want their wife to have been one that ran around. Well, Christ doesn't want a wife who was someone who ran around. But unlike most men, he's kept himself for her as well. He's pure for her. And he wants to be faithful to her. Christ isn't going to go out and find some other women to run around with. He's not going to have a whole bunch of churches out there that he's running around with. He's got one. And he's going to be faithful to her. And he expects her to be faithful to him. Been a lot in the news this past year about husbands who were unfaithful to their wives. A lot of them. Somebody was listing them on the radio. And I had forgotten about so many. But I mean, there's been big, high-profile, big-name people, you know. And that's not uncommon in our world. But it's not something that Christ would ever do. He's going to be faithful. And he expects his bride to be the same. But not only because the church is his bride, but we must exalt Jesus' church because it is the support for faith and truth. You know, we live in a society where more and more truth is coming into play. Well, if you think so, but I don't think so, and so I'll have my faith and you have yours, and I don't believe like you believe, and I'll have my religion and you have your religion, and that's okay for you, but that would never work for me, and this is okay for me, so leave me alone and don't judge me. And that's those kinds of things. But the fact of the matter is, the Bible teaches that there is truth, the truth. Only one. And the faith. Only one. And the church is the support for faith and truth. Somebody asked the other day, if we don't stand up, who will? The answer is nobody. If the church doesn't stand for truth, there's nobody left. 1 Timothy chapter 3 and verse 15. Paul says, but if I tarry long, that thou mayest know how thou oughtst to behave thyself in the house of God, which is the church of the living God, the pillar and ground of truth. The church is the pillar that supports the truth. That's what a pillar does. It holds the roof up. We've got several beams in here that hold the roof up. That's what a pillar is good for. And the church is the pillar that holds the truth up. Unfortunately, a lot of times, churches tend to spend more of their time hiding the truth than holding it up. We need to hold the truth up. We need not be ashamed of it. Colossians 1, 23 and 24. Paul says, you need to continue in the faith, grounded and settled, and do not be moved away from the hope of the gospel. We need to hold on to it. We need to support the truth. And the church needs to be exalted and lifted up because it does stand for the truth. I know there are a lot of different churches out there that teach some good things. I see some of the commercials that the Mormon church puts out about family. And there's some wonderful commercials about family. But I know they've got some other doctrines that are just off the wall messed up. I know that, you know, some churches may teach good things about holy living. And that's good. We need to learn about holy living. But then they practice all kinds of things in their worship to God that's not according to the Scriptures. You know, another church may have some things right about worship, but they may let folks live any kind of way they want to. And that can't be allowed either. So, all of these ways that we look at, we've got to support the church and exalt the church because it supports the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. The church has to be there to do that. Third, we must exalt Jesus' church because it is His body. Bride, but not just His bride, but it's His body. How many of you would spit in Christ's face? How many of you would punch him in the gut, stab him in the back, cut off his hand or his foot? And yet that's what we do when we mistreat others in the church. We're hurting Christ's body. How many of you would like to infect Christ with a deadly disease? Can you even say such a thing? That's what we do when we allow sin through us to enter the church. We're bringing a deadly disease into Christ's body. We need to work on that this year. We're looking at it. We need to exalt Jesus' church. And in doing that, we need to realize it's His body. Ephesians 1, 22 and 23 says, "It has put all things under His feet and gave Him to be the head over all things to the church, which is His body, the fullness of Him that filleth all in all." The church is His body. Colossians 1, 18, "He is the head of the body, the church, who is the beginning, the firstborn from the dead, that in all things He might have the preeminence." As His body, we need to obey Him. Just as our body obeys our head. When our head sends a signal for our body to do something, if the body doesn't respond the right way, we think, oh, something's wrong, I better go to the doctor. Well, if the church doesn't respond the way Jesus commands it to, then there's something wrong. It needs to be fixed. Needs to be repaired. The fourth thing we want to notice is that we must exalt Jesus' church because He died for it. We mentioned earlier Acts 20, verses 26 through 30, as Paul called those Ephesian elders to him and he mentions to them, says, "I take you to record this day, I am pure from the blood of all men, for I have not shunned to declare unto you all the counsel of God. Take heed therefore unto yourselves and to all the flock over the which the Holy Ghost hath made you overseers, to feed the church of God which He has purchased with His own blood. For I know this, that after my departing shall grievous wolves enter in among you, not sparing the flock. Also of your own selves shall men arise, speaking perverse things, to draw away disciples after them." That's an amazing thing. That He knew these things were coming and He warned them. And yet some of those things still happened. They still happened to that church in Ephesus. But notice what He says. He purchased it with His own blood. He was willing to die for the church. That means it's pretty special to Him. Because as I mentioned earlier, there aren't many things that someone would be willing to die for. If He was willing to die for it, then He had to think pretty highly of it. And to insult it, or to damage it by our conduct or by our words, is a slap in the face to the one who thought it worth dying for. The fifth thing we want to notice is that we must exalt Jesus' church because it is the only earthly home of salvation. There is nowhere else on earth you can go to find salvation. You can't find it on the internet. You can't find it at the mall. You can't find it anywhere else. You can't find it in another world religion somewhere. Jesus said, "No man comes to the Father but by Me." And nobody comes to Christ unless they're in His body. And His body is the church. Acts 2:47 says, "Praising God and having favor with all the people, the Lord added to the church daily such as should be saved." The Lord added them to the church. Those who were being saved, guess where they went? Church. Those not saved, they go anywhere they want to go. But when someone is being saved, the Lord said, "You're in the church." How many people were saved from the flood in Noah's day? Only eight. Where were all eight of those people who were saved? Probably not. How many folks were in another boat? How many folks on raft? How many folks just built a big tall building and stayed in it? Well, how many folks learned how to swim well enough to outswim the flood? No, there was no other saving place than the ark. That was it. And the same is true today.
There is only one safe place, one place to go where salvation is found, and that's the Lord's church. Well, there are a lot of other churches out there, but only one is the Lord's church where He puts the saved. Hebrews 12, 22-24, we see that you are come unto Mount Zion and unto the city of the living God, the heavenly Jerusalem, and to an innumerable company of angels, to the church of the firstborn, which are written in heaven. Whose names are written in heaven? Those that are part of the assembly. Those that are part of the church. Nobody else's name got written in heaven. And God judges all, and the spirits of just men made perfect. And to the Jesus, the mediator of the new covenant, and to the blood of sprinkling that speaketh better things than that of Abel. We come to the heavenly Jerusalem. Beautiful of God. And I know we think about heaven, but we need to understand that the church here on earth, this is heaven on earth. It's as close as it gets. And that's what we need to strive to make it. I know, you know, we're still physically going to have problems, and financially, we still got to work, and work for retirement, and income problems, and we don't have sickness here on earth, and those things. But spiritually, we need to be working to grow. Even though the body is here day by day, the spirit should be being renewed day by day. We need to look forward to that. So we need to know this by that we must exalt Jesus' church every way we can. I know this is spoken of spiritual gifts in 1 Corinthians 14, but I think it's applicable to us. It's not a part of it at any rate. Verse 12, he says, even so ye for the message here, zealous of spiritual gifts, seek that ye may excel to the edifying of the church. There was something for us that were selfish about their spirits. They wanted them for personal gain. They wanted to take advantage of them to get themselves lifted up higher. He says, don't do that. Use whatever gift you've got to edify or build up the church. And we need to do the same thing. With everything we say, with everything we do, we need to be building the church up exactly the eyes of the world. There are enough people out there running the church down. We don't need to be part of it. We need to be part of exalting it because it is Jesus' church. And He will come back. But if you've been part of a group that's running it down and bombing it out and speaking about dirt, guess what? You're not going to be the one who comes back for it. But He's not going to come back to take you home. I hear the story, you have not treated the church the way that He wants it to be treated. You need to consider that. You need to repent of sin in your life that you have corrupted His glory to God with. But if you have not received His body, you need to consider that. Get that straight. Because I think the disease is actually the body given to get rid of that disease, or the gospel set the disease out. Jesus took care of the disease. It took the one way or another, one way or another. He would not allow that disease to start to get rid of it. We need to get rid of that. There's a time. Even if you're not a member of Christ's church, there is no other place for salvation. You believe that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God, and you're going to obey Him. You're going to be saved. Confess Him as the Christ. To be buried with Him in baptism. 2 Corinthians 16,